to do to save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say, but what a day, how's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Ringside Politics with a Punch with Jeff Truaire. WGSO 990 and WGSO.com want you to get in on the conversation. Call us at 556-9696. Now, sit back and get ready for Ringside Politics with a Punch. Here's your host from ABC 26, The Conifer, The Kenner Star, KTV, City Business, and WLAE. It's WGSO's own Jeff Truaire.
And good morning, everyone. Jeff Cruer here. Thanks for joining us. It is sort of a nice but overcast Monday morning. Be careful heading into work. Sort of misty out there. A lot to talk about here this morning. We're going to be jam-packed. In a few minutes, we'll be opening up our phone lines and inviting you to join us. Very easy. Just pick up the phone. Give us a call. 504-556-9696. And we're going to start with a special guest who is joining us as we start this 10 o'clock hour. Thanks for joining us. It's Ringside on WGSO. Jeff Cruer here with you weekdays 7 to 11. Right now, we're going to talk about what is going on here, the national pastime, right? The World Series. We've got, of course, NFL action, but the World Series is going on. Game 5 coming up. The series is knotted 2-2. And our next guest has written an interesting book. I wanted to talk about it. Baseball Between Us. Mike Lurie is an award-winning journalist, 25 years of experience, TV and radio. He's a political and investigative reporter for the CBS station in Sacramento, where his On the Money reports provide an in-depth look at the connection between money and politics. He's done a series on the KKK, which earned an outstanding achievement award for investigative reporting from UPI. He lives in Northern California with his wife and children, and his first book is Baseball Between Us. It's a true story of a father-son road trip to visit every Major League Baseball stadium. 16 years, 32 ballparks, 43,000 miles together, and sounds like quite a journey. Mike Lurie joining us here on the Ringside program. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Hi, Jeff, good morning.
And, boy, that was quite an effort to reach all those ballparks, 32 of them.
It was really a lot of fun. You know, I love traveling around the country, and my son enjoys travel, and it was a great way to bond together as sort of a father-son team.
Tell us what you discovered when you went to all those ballparks. You know, I look around sometimes, Mike, and I see some of these games that aren't playoff games during the middle of the season, and it looks like there are a lot of empty seats in those baseball stadiums. Some stadiums seem to have so much more excitement and you have more followers, such as like Fenway Park, of course, always seems to be jam-packed and an exciting atmosphere, but doesn't seem like it is this case in all the ballparks.
Well, that's true. I mean, Fenway is a very special place. It's got a strong tradition for baseball, and it's always going to be sold out. They've had a record, you know, number of sellouts there. Yankee Stadium is always going to have lots of seats. Lots of people in the seats there, but you're right. There are some stadiums that are not as well attended. But you know, one of the most exciting experiences we had was in San Francisco, in front of a full stadium. We got to see Barry Bonds hit his historic 715th home run to eclipse Babe Ruth on the home run list.
Wow! And now, of course, look at Barry Bonds, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, he's a controversial figure, and everyone's, you know, pointing fingers of him for performance-enhancing drugs, and that's you know, going to be probably a real stigma that will prevent him from getting into the Hall of Fame. But I've got to tell you, Jeff, that being there on that day and watching him hit that home run into the center field seats was one of the most exciting moments in sports I've ever
witnessed. I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure it was an amazing experience to be there. But if we could talk about that for a second, sure. Because I think it does impact baseball pretty heavily. Seems like now that haven't they cracked down on these types of enhancements, steroid uses and so forth, and now it seems like the home runs have dropped, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, Barry Bonds set the single-season record of 73, and no one's come even close since because baseball has, in fact, done a lot of testing and made sure that you can't be using performance-enhancing drugs. And now, It's very rare for anybody to hit over 50 in a season. It's been a dramatic drop-off. Absolutely. So that's been had a major impact on the game.
Do you think that has affected, Mike, attendance? What is the state of baseball today?
Well, baseball is still, you know, an incredibly popular sport, but I think it did have an impact on attendance because when Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds were hitting those home runs and Sammy Sosa and all those guys, the ballparks were packed. Everybody was excited. I mean, seeing giant, humongous home runs going out of the park is what people pay for. And that's been taken away from the game because it was, you know, it was artificial, it was enhanced. And so, you know, in some of the ballparks, you're not seeing many people, one of them being the Florida Marlins, for example. They have many more empty seats than they do people in them. You know, there was one game, I think, where there was a Twitter picture that showed something like 500 people in the stands. But there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, it's not just, you know, the lack of home runs. It's that they don't have a good base there. South Florida's not really a real stronghold for baseball sentiment, and they're going to get a new stadium next year, so maybe that will help.
You know, and now we've got this World Series, and I heard before the World Series started, Mike, all kind of concerns, well, boy, the ratings are not going to be good because these teams are not really big market teams. And have you had a chance to see, I mean, how have the ratings been for this series?
Yeah, I've looked at some of the preliminary games, and they are down compared to last year and some of the previous years, and you know, not unexpected. I mean, the St. Louis Cardinals are one of the most popular franchises anywhere. They draw typically 3 million fans a year, so they have very, very high ratings in St. Louis. And the Texas Rangers are drawing well in Dallas and Fort Worth and Arlington. They have high TV ratings. But nationwide, you know, they don't have the kind of net impact. They don't have the tradition. They've never won a World Series before. And so as a result, they don't have a strong fan base outside of their region. And that's probably one of the reasons why the ratings have dropped off a little bit for this year.
You know, I have to tell you, being here, I am a Boston Red Sox fan, and I was amazed at their just collapse this year. And they're one of the teams that really draws a tremendous following across the country, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And the Red Sox had a historic collapse in September. They went something like 6-26 for the month. They were a shoe-in. They were penciled in for the playoffs and everything. And then, of course, you've seen there have been a series of articles that the Boston Globe has broken showing why they collapsed. They had terrible chemistry in the clubhouse. They had pitchers that were drinking beer in the clubhouse during the games when they weren't pitching.
Wow.
They were, you know, eating fried chicken and stuff like that, you know, during the games. They just weren't focused on baseball, and it showed, and they just collapsed in September.
Hey, Mike, so many questions. We're also going to open up our phone lines, 504-556-9696. Jeff Cruer here. The book is Baseball Between Us, a true story of a father-son road trip that visited every Major League Baseball stadium. Took him 16 years, 32 ballparks, 43,000 miles together. Mike Lurie and his son, Matt. Must have been a great bonding experience, huh, Mike?
It was fantastic, and believe me, there were challenges along the way, too, Jeff, because when you're dealing with a teenager, you know, a lot of things can happen. You can get into a lot of fights over wake-up time and bedtime and food and, you know, music on the radio. All those things can lead to some very severe disagreements. One of the things that my son did that really kind of got my gander up was he started calling me by my first name. You know, we'd go on we'd go in the car, and you know, he'd say, "Hey, Mike, where are we going today?" And I'm like, "What are you calling me my first name for?" And he goes, "Well, you know, we're equals, aren't we? You know, we're baseball buddies." And I said, "Yeah, we're baseball buddies, but I'm your dad, and you're the son, and you should be, you know, respectful of your elders."
Right.
And he said, "Well, that's an old-fashioned concept, Mike. Better get used to it."
So how long did that last? Does he still call you
about
Mike?
About a day and a half.
Oh, okay.
You know, he played the string on that as long as he could, and I just let him know, look, you know, that's just not cool with me. You know, we're going on this trip, and, you know, we're not equals here. I'm the father, you're the son, you know, and parenting, just like baseball, has a lots of things in common. Both have rules, both have traditions, and both have a boss. And in parenting, the father's the boss, and that's the way it is.
All right, let's take some calls. 504-556-9696. Let's see what our friend Jay in Mid-City has to say. What's going on, Jay? Good morning.
Hey, it wasn't Barry Bonds didn't break Ruth's record. He broke Aaron's record, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. But before that, he had to break Babe Ruth's record. Babe Ruth had 714 home runs, and then Barry hit 715. That was the one that we happened to see in San Francisco. And then, of course, he did go on to beat Hank Aaron, and ultimately hit 762 to lead the majors.
Here's the thing I always say when people try to compare, you know, the modern era. I challenge any modern hitter to hit home runs on the Babe Ruth regimen, which is what? Several pitchers of beer and about a dozen hot dogs before every game. Never saw a weight room in his life. I would say any modern hitter would be lucky to hit one home run a season on the Ruth regimen, okay? And plus, Ruth pitched for 4 years, okay, batted at the bottom of the lineup, and his career began in the dead ball era. I know a lot of people, you know, baseball historians will tell you that really none of these guys, especially since they're on enhanced, drugged enhanced, compare to Ruth in any way, shape, or manner. As far as he was a freak of nature, and there never ever will be anyone else like him. Sorry to say that, but
yeah, no, that's right.
It has to be said.
Well, Babe Ruth, you're right. You know, did pitch a game. He was a winning pitcher in, I believe it was the 1918 World Series when he pitched for the Boston Red Sox. And then, of course, he was traded to the Yankees and became a prolific hitter and, you know, hit 3 home runs in a game twice during World Series. One was in 1928, I think. The other was in 1926. You saw Albert Pujols the other night hit 3 home runs in a game, and Babe Ruth has done that twice.
Yeah.
Right. So but like was, I said, the Babe, he stands alone. I don't know. If you have to put one in somebody else's era, people always play this game in sports. You have to put one in somebody's era, and somebody has to be in the other guy's era, right? So if you put Babe Ruth in the steroid era, he would have hit well over 1,000 home runs. So, I mean, you know, how can you really compare, you know?
He probably would have, and not only that, they didn't believe in conditioning or strengthening, weights or anything back then. The only lifting they did back then was beer mugs.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. All right, you have a good one.
Hey, thanks, Jay. Appreciate the call. 504-556-9696. So the World Series is going on, coming up on game number 5. Mike, do you think the World Series should move back to daytime starts?
Well, you know, that was how it was in the old days. I remember in 1963, my dad took me to the game one of the World Series, the Yankees versus the Dodgers at Yankee Stadium. Whitey Ford was on the mound for the Yankees, Sandy Koufax for the Dodgers. I got to miss school, which was a treat, and spend the day at the ballpark, and it was terrific. And, of course, you know, Yankee Stadium is the epicenter of the baseball world, and I was convinced the Yankees were going to win, but Sandy Koufax mowed down 15 Yankees that day, and they won the game, and I cried all the way home, but developed a lifelong love for baseball. But, you know, the point is that it was during the daytime, and there's a, you know, that means people can actually see it. A lot of these games don't start till, you know, 8 o'clock on the Eastern time zone, 8:30, and by the time the game is over, especially if it goes in extra innings, it's midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and that's no time to be watching a baseball game.
Right.
So, yeah, I would like to see some of the tradition. Maybe at least one game should start at, 3 o'clock or something so that people can actually see it.
504-556-9696 is our talk line. Mike Lurie is our guest. The book is Baseball Between Us. Let's go to Candace, who's with us, Algiers Point. Hey, Candace, good morning.
Hi, I'm actually Candace from Colorado, Jeff. Remember me?
Oh, yes. How you doing,
okay,
Candace?
Hey, I wanted to ask, growing up in Boston, the only stadium I ever went to was Fenway. Until Colorado built its Coors Field. Mike, have you been to Coors Field?
Yes, I love Coors Field. I think it's terrific. It's got, a great atmosphere there. I love that whole Lodo section of Denver. You've got lots of shops and nightclubs and restaurants that cater to the new ballpark. You've got a great scenic view of the Rockies there. It's a terrific place to see a ball game.
Yeah, and so unique because they did the outside all in brick, so it did blend in with the warehouse district. So
right.
When I first walked in, knowing just Fenway from the 70s and what it looked like, immediately I thought, oh, my God, they need to tear down Fenway. But I've heard the work they've done on Fenway. But in comparison to other fields across the country, where would, on a 1 to 10 scale, where would Coors Field rate?
Well, I actually have a rankings of the parks, of the various parks in my book. And let's see, Coors Field, I have that as number 7. Number 7 on the list, the Rockies and Coors Field, because of the great view of the Rockies, the terrific district there,
yep.
The atmosphere for baseball. Number 1, 2, and 3 are going to be San Francisco, AT&T Park. Number 2, Pittsburgh Pirates at PNC Park. You have a beautiful view of the river and the waterfront. You can take a water taxi to the game. And, of course, Fenway Park is number 3. It's hard to beat the tradition of the Green Monster.
Now, where does Wrigley fit in, Mike?
You know, Wrigley, I have a little bit further down the list at number 11. I mean, I love the ivy-covered walls and the bleacher bums and all that. It's historic and a terrific place to go see a game. The fans are fantastic, but it does not have the modern amenities that so many fans are looking for these days in terms of food stands and Wi-Fi like San Francisco has and modern bathrooms. You know, it's very cramped and crowded there. It just doesn't have the modern amenities that some of the newer parks does.
Candace,
and the other thing, Mike, is how old was your son when you were doing this?
Well, you know, we first started when he was about five, you know, and he got, you know, some exposure to it then. But the actual road trip began when he was 16, and he was the terrible teen at that point. You know, he used to use sleeping in as a weapon because he didn't want to get up, and we had fights every morning on having to get to the ballpark in time. But and then he finished when he was 21 when we hit our last park, and it was great because we could actually drink a beer together at the game, and that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
I find you fascinating. I have a 19-year-old son. That bonding is so tough when they're teenagers. So my hat's off to you, and look forward to buying the book.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Candace. Appreciate the call very much, and good questions. All right, so now you've got my curiosity piqued. Okay, so number one is San Francisco, followed by Pittsburgh, followed by Fenway. What's the rest of your top 10 list, Mike?
Okay, I've got the Baltimore Orioles. Camden Yards is terrific. That's number four. You can have a barbecue with Boog Powell at that original retro ballpark. Number five, here's kind of a surprise choice, Detroit Tigers Comerica Park. And I love it because you've got these great statues in the outfield of Cobb and Kaline and Horton, and you're very close to the action in the bleachers there. It's a terrific place to see the game. You've got your whole backdrop of the city of Detroit in the outfield. It's fantastic. And then number six is the new ballpark in Minnesota, Target Field, where the Twins play. You can actually take a light rail train from the airport directly to the park, which is pretty neat. You don't even need a car or anything else to get there. Colorado, as I mentioned, Coors Field, number seven. St. Louis Cardinals, Busch Stadium is number eight. The Arch is awesome, and it's just a fantastic downtown park that has all the amenities. And Philadelphia is number nine, Citizens Bank Ballpark. You can take a subway there and hang out with all the Fanatic fans. And then I've got number 10, Cleveland Indians, Progressive Field. Heritage Park there is a place where you can see all the historic Cleveland Indians and read about their plaques and everything. Bob Feller. It's just a great place to see a ball game.
So some of the iconic places such as Dodger Stadium, where does that fall on the list?
Dodger Stadium I've got at number 13.
Okay.
It's a great ballpark, a lot of fond memories there. Sunshine and palm trees, you can't beat it, but it is a little bit old. It's one of the oldest ballparks now, built in 1962. And, you know, it doesn't have all the modern amenities, but it's still a great place to see a game.
And then Yankee Stadium, this is a new Yankee Stadium, right?
New Yankee Stadium, and I rank it at number 12. You know, it's much, much improved over the original Yankee Stadium. It's the legendary park that blends the old and the new. They've got, you know, a high-definition TV, a lot of tradition there with the baseball monuments. The fans are screaming the players' names at the beginning of the game. It's fantastic. But a lot of what I did in the judging is the setting. You know, where is it located? And it's in the Bronx. It's, you know, not the greatest neighborhood. It's a little bit more difficult to get there, although you can take a subway. And, you know, but you don't have the dramatic Manhattan skyline over the center field fence that you do, you know, like in a lot of the other parks. So for that reason, I knocked it down a little bit.
All right, Mike, hang on with us. We'll come back and take more phone calls. 504-556-9696. Wrap it up with our special guests. Mike Lurie, the book is Baseball Between Us. Go to the website, baseballbetweenus.com, for more information. We'll link to it on our podcast page. We'll take a brief time out, take care of some business, more with our special guest right after these important messages. It's Ringside on WGSO. Hey, welcome back. A few more minutes with our special guest, Mike Lurie. The book is Baseball Between Us. And, of course, we've got the World Series going on right now. Cardinals and Rangers all tied up at two each. And Mike, a real quick question here before we conclude. As far as Major League Baseball goes from here on out, do you think they should possibly ban the designated hitter? Do you think that would be something that would improve the game?
Well, you know, Jeff, I'd love to see that because I think there's a disparity between the leagues. The National League doesn't have it, and the American League does. And, you know, it's a strategic thing when you have to wonder, you know, what do? Do you pitch to that guy in the seventh inning when maybe your pitcher is due up and he's winning 1-0, but you got guys on base? You know, the manager has to make a decision. Do I put a pinch hitter here and bring in another pitcher in order to try to get some runs? That strategy is an important part of the game that has been taken away in the American League, and you've got guys that are just simply a bat. And I always felt that, you know, players should be complete ball players. They should be fielders as well as hitters. And I think it cheapens the game a little bit to have just a guy who's a designated bat. I'd like to see the DH eliminated from the rule books and go back to traditional baseball.
Do you think there should be more or less interleague play? Because that's sort of been a recent phenomenon. Some have criticized it. Others seem to like it.
I love interleague play. I think it's great, and the fans respond dramatically. When the Astros, for example, are playing the Texas Rangers, you know, there's an interstate rivalry there that heats up. You know, when the Phillies play the Red Sox, you know, that's exciting.
How about the Mets and the Yankees?
The Yankees is exciting.
Yeah.
Those are matchups that fans mm-hmm. really love to see. And why shouldn't we have more of that? That would really create some excitement, I think, for the game.
You also believe that AstroTurf should be banned?
Get rid of it.
Yeah.
I just think natural grass is the way to go. That's how it was in the beginning. I'm sort of a traditionalist when,
sure.
as far as that goes. But and you know, some of the AstroTurf has actually hurt players' knees, and they can get injured. And they don't recover as well. I like to see baseball played outside, under the sunshine, natural conditions as much as possible. I realize there's some parts where you need to have the roofs, but let it retract like they have in Phoenix and some of the others, but that would make the game, I think, more exciting.
How many, real quick, Mike, how many do have AstroTurf and how many have natural gas? Natural grass.
Most of them have natural grass. That's been sort of the movement lately.
Good.
As the older parks have been phased out, like, you know, Philadelphia, they've gotten rid of the artificial and gone to more natural. So a few of them have it, like in the Tampa Bay, for example. You know, obviously it's artificial turf. Some of the indoor stadiums have more of the AstroTurf.
Mike Lurie, fascinating discussion. Thanks so much for joining us. Congrats on doing the book, and seems like a great choice for folks out there looking for a good book about baseball and also father-son relationships. BaseballBetweenUs.com for more info. Quick timeout, more ringside coming your way. It's WGSO.